Hey, super fans, this is Allison Mack. I played Chloe Sullivan on Smallville and Power Girl in the DC animated universe. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hello to everyone out there in podcast land, and to all of you longtime listeners, and to all of you new listeners. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Year 4 begins today. This is the first episode of Year 4. So glad you could be here for it. Can't think of a better way to kick off this new season of the show than by chatting with the incredibly talented Allison Mack. Allison Mack's going to be here. We're going to be continuing our 15th anniversary celebration of the hit show Smallville. Allison's going to be along in just a few minutes. Can't wait for that. Going to be a fun conversation today. I hope everyone out there had a chance to check out the Comic Book Central 3rd anniversary special. Big thanks to all of you listeners who wrote in to tell me about your favorite moments from the past year of the show. I really appreciate it. I know you enjoyed revisiting some of those moments on the show on that episode. That was fun. And thanks to all of you out there who are kind enough to record and send in a voicemail. That is something new that we're doing on the show this season. So something very cool. It's on the website. Very simple to do. You head over to the website. It's comicbookcentral.net. You click that app on the right-hand side of the homepage that says send voicemail. Tell me what's on your mind. Send it in. I'll play it on the show. It's as easy as that. So big thanks to everyone out there who did that. In fact, I got a couple more voicemails sent in this week. One by our 3rd anniversary giveaway winner, Scott Doran. Scott snagged that bionic novel, Cyborg. Very cool novel by Martin Caden. And I also heard from my buddy over at the IndieCast. And he also runs Terrificon. He's the big cheese at Terrificon. Great comic book convention. Mitch Halleck. Let's check in with both of those gents right now.
Hey, Joe. I just want to thank you for the Cyborg prize that I won on the 3rd anniversary podcast of Comic Book Central. I enjoyed the show, and this is Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hey, Joe, this is Mitch here at Terrificon and your fellow co-host over at the IndieCast, wishing you a belated happy anniversary for Comic Book Central. And I have to thank you for not only being a terrific panel host every year, but bringing the comic book characters of the TV, movies, even the books to life. Thank you very much. And you are terrific.
Hey, thanks for all the kind words, Scott and Mitch. Thanks for recording that, sending it in. And as always, thanks for listening to the show. Comic Book Central gets bigger and better each and every year, and all of you listeners out there are a huge part of that. When you subscribe to the show, whether it's on iTunes or Blueberry, when you leave a review in iTunes, and you like what you're hearing, you leave a review, that always helps. When you share the lair, when you share the show, when it posts on Facebook, facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork, Twitter @comicbookctrl. I post those links each and every week to the show. When you share the lair, you are supporting the show and you're helping it to reach a wider audience. And you have my thanks for that. Much appreciated. By the way, speaking of comic book shows and giveaways, if you are a fan of the superhero shows on the CW, more guests from those shows are going to be coming up on future episodes of Comic Book Central, as well as some very cool giveaways related to those shows. So more giveaways this year than ever before. That's what's headed your way, and that's why you need to catch each and every episode of Comic Book Central. You do not want to miss out. Great starting point here for you new listeners. Subscribe to the show. Check it out. You won't miss a moment. You are in the right place at the right time today. Let's get a little bit more information on my special guest. Then I'm going to be back for an in-depth conversation with the one and only Allison Mack. Allison started her acting career in commercials, but it wasn't long before she was appearing in feature films, TV movies, and TV series, including guest shots on Evening Shade, Seventh Heaven, and Empty Nest, and starring roles on ABC's Hiller and Diller and Fox's Opposite Sex, featuring a pre-Heroes Milo Ventimiglia and a pre-Captain America Chris Evans. In 2001, Allison entered the world of a pre-Superman. That's the story of Clark Kent's early years. Of course, we're talking about Smallville. On the show, Allison was cast as Chloe Sullivan, Clark Kent's classmate and keeper of the Wall of Weird, a chronicle of the strange goings-on in Smallville following a devastating meteor shower.
On October 16th, 1989, Smallville became the meteor capital of the world. Ever since that day, our little town has been besieged by a staggering number of seemingly inexplicable and allegedly unrelated events.
I should know. I've been keeping score. I've chased sources an Area 51 fanatic would scoff at. I've investigated leads that any conspiracy theorist would just call paranoid. I've printed stories that any sane paper would just reject. The problem is they're all true. Now, I have a theory. I believe the 1989 meteor rocks are responsible for some of the strangest things never printed by our mainstream press. And fortunately for all of you naysayers, backing down is so not my style.
Over an incredible 10-season run, Allison's Chloe Sullivan goes from teen detective to superhero sidekick to Justice League mission manager. And along the way, Allison even found time to sit in the director's chair for a few standout episodes. Now, since the Smallville finale, Allison has continued to appear in numerous television and movie roles and can be heard in several animated projects, including a return trip to the world of superheroes as Power Girl in the DC animated film Superman Batman Public Enemies. Well, my guest today is an actor, director, and producer. She spent 10 seasons in the meteor capital of the world, Smallville, Kansas, as Chloe Sullivan. It is a pleasure to celebrate the 15th anniversary of Smallville with Allison Mack. Allison, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Thank you so much, Joe. That's so weird that it's a 15th anniversary. Like, I didn't even think about that until you said it. I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, really? Oh, I thought you would have been inundated with, like, people just... Yeah. I see all these things online and people, you know, like the 10 best episodes and...
Oh, you know, wow, that's so cool.
Well, it's on Hulu now because, I mean, that it's sort of gotten a... I mean, not that it hasn't lived on in DVD and Blu-ray, but my goodness, now it's on Hulu. Do you find it's kind of reaching another generation now? Are you getting some feedback from people going, hey, I just found out about this show?
Yeah, it is. And I'm so glad. You know, I mean, I think one of the things I was so sad about was the fact that we weren't available on like any sort of Netflix or Hulu or anything like that. I was sort of like, wow, we're a really good show and we worked really hard. Why did we die? What's going on? So the fact that we are now included in that world is really exciting for me. I'm very pleased that that's happening. I honestly, like, I have a very thin skin, so I don't pay too much attention to a lot of the things that are written online because I find that I can read like really nice things and then I read one thing that's not nice and I have I go into a tailspin.
I kind of get that. When you look at your social media pages, I noticed that you're just very much about positive thoughts and reinforcement. Yes. And the internet is not generally a place where those things can be found.
You know what?
It's
so interesting because I have such a, my perspective on humanity and technology, I think, is very specific because of a teacher that I have that I work with. His name's Keith Raniere, and he always says, you know, like, technology is a tool created by humanity. And any tool can be used as a weapon or as a tool, you know, like a scalpel in the hand of a surgeon is very different than a scalpel in the hand of a murderer. And yet, you know, the tool is the same thing. So I think that technology and the internet and social media are incredible tools that we have that we can use to either build society and create more culture and more civilization or destroy it. And so I'm just starting to dip my toe into the potency of social media and explore what else I can do with it. But it up until this point, it's been really like I haven't had a chance to really think strategically about what I want to do with this. But in the meantime, I'm going to maintain my relationship with the people that support me through positive affirmations and things that I think at least are good with respect to what they're upholding in the world.
Well, that's kind of like a characteristic of Chloe Sullivan, too. I mean, she was always kind of like the positive, just always looking for the best in things and just
you know what?
Trying to dig for truth. And
totally. Don't think that I don't wish that I could be more like the character I played for 10 years. There were certain things that they had me do and say on that show that I was like, damn, if I could be that noble, things would be really different in my life.
Well, that's got to be the coolest thing as an actor because you get to kind of live that out on some level, especially for 10 years. My goodness, too, a decade
Definitely.
Of your life.
No, definitely. And I mean, I think I was so fortunate to be cast in the show, in the character that I was cast in the way that I was cast with the writers and everything like that, because they were so supportive of my vision. And also, too, like, it's very rare that as an 18-year-old female in the film and television industry, especially on a network television show, that you have the opportunity to play any sort of character of depth or strength or principle. And so the fact that the character that I happened to land, that I was cast in, was a character that represented such truth and such nobility and such loyalty, like, that character really meant a lot to me, and I took it very seriously. So I want to make sure that I uphold the legacy of her.
Yeah, and you really get to grow in that role, too, and we'll talk about that. But, yeah, you talk about acting at a young age. I mean, 18 on the show, but, man, it goes back even further than that. What was your early interest in acting? Do you remember your first role at all? Your first paid acting performance?
Yeah, totally. Okay. I did a commercial for a chocolate company, and they made me spit out the chocolate so that I wouldn't get sick.
Because totally. You're just eating a ton of it, right, as you're going?
Yeah, exactly, all day. Imagine, you have to take the bite of the same chocolate bar all day, you know, you're four. It's like two bites of a chocolate bar, and that's over half your body weight, you know, in chocolate.
It had to be confusing as a kid, too. It's like, here, kid, here's candy, and then... But don't
and
eat
then
any of it.
Take it away. Yeah. No, there were many things that were confusing as a kid being in the acting profession. That was one of several. But yeah, no, you know, I didn't actively say, Mommy, I want to do this. It was something that, like, my mom very naively and sweetly was like, oh, my daughter's really cute and we live in LA. Like, let's see if we can get her into some modeling or something, you know, like, kind of thinking maybe I can make some money for college. And then all of a sudden it, like, spiraled into something much bigger than that. And okay. She took me to my first acting class when I was five, and I fell in love with the whole improvisation theater game play aspect of it. And I was, you know, as a kid, I had a big imagination and I wasn't afraid of people. So I was good at it in that way. And then by the time I was about 8 or 9, I was committed to what I was doing, and there was no going back.
What were some of those things you learned early on? Because it's tough for, you know, child actors, because sometimes you see them acting or something, or they, you know, they become precocious or whatever. But what was it that you were learning at that early age that sort of helped you develop that sort of natural acting style that you have?
You know what? I don't know if it was something so much that I learned as much as it was just the environment that I grew up in. My family's very artistic and very creative, and my parents are incredibly supportive of that type of lifestyle. And my father's an opera singer. So, you know, my earliest memories are in the opera house, in the light box, looking at him performing on stage, you know, like, it was very much kind of a part of my world. And so the idea of tapping into my imagination and expressing myself as a way to connect with people was very natural for me and felt really good. I liked it a lot.
Was this in Germany, and then you moved to the States after that?
Yeah, we moved to the States when I was 2, and I started acting when I was 4. Okay. So, But my dad, I mean, that's all my dad has ever done. So that didn't end by any means in Germany. You know, that Germany was just my first experience of that.
Now, your older brother, he was the Superman fan, right?
My older brother was, yes, totally. We watched Christopher Reeves, and we used to sing the theme song and pretend to fly. Yeah, my brother was
okay,
super.
Okay, so you had the Donner movies on.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
Okay. What did you understand? Because obviously he's reading the comic books. He gets Superman and the hands on the hips and Lois Lane and all that. What did you get from the movies at that time? Did you understand how big the world of Superman was?
No, I had no idea. I didn't spend a lot of time watching movies or reading books. I was much more interested in people and sort of live interactions. So my brother was really into books and comics and movies and TV shows, and my sister is also really into that stuff, but they're more introverted by nature. So I think it's easier, more comfortable, more interesting for them to interact with the world and storytelling in that way, whereas I'm much more physical and much more of an extrovert. I like being with people. So for me, like, going to the movies is great. I love going to the movies because I love being able to talk about them afterwards. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
So
it's funny because I talk to actresses sometimes and they're like, well, I didn't really read comic. And I'm like, okay, I know you didn't read comic books growing up.
Yeah, no, but you know what? I know a lot of people that, I mean, like I said, my sister is, like, all about it. A majority of the stuff that I know about comics and the different Marvel and DC worlds are from my sister.
Oh, so you kind of run things through her and then like, okay, well, give me the background on this character or something.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, she loves Comic-Con. She loves, you know, conventions and dressing up and all of that sort of stuff. So she's able to really inform me not only in like the world of the actual characters, but like the world of just like the fandom and how that works and what that's like. So,
wow. Okay. So now coming into Smallville, obviously you had a lot of television experience coming into this role. How did you find out about the show, the roles? How did this world come into your life?
Well, I was fortunate enough to have been acting for 14 years before the show even started to come around. And in those 14 years...
You were a veteran.
I was a veteran. Exactly. No, but I developed some really good relationships, specifically with Peter Roth, who's the president of Warner Brothers production companies, Warner Brothers Studios, which is our production company. And then I was also friends with Dee Dee Bradley, who was our casting director. And I had just had a good track record with them. They'd grown up with me. I'd worked for them before. And so when Smallville came around, you know, so much in the industry and in Los Angeles is reputation and just steadfastness and consistency in the work that you produce. And so I had been around for so long and I had been consistent in the work that I was producing. And we had worked well together before that when this show happened, my friend Dee Dee, who's the casting director, said, like, you know, Peter's producing this show. I really want you in it. You're not right for any of the characters. And I was like, cool. Great. Like, call me when there's something good for me, you know? And she said, I think you could. She goes, you're not right for Lana at all. But she goes, I think you could do Chloe. But they don't want to have a Caucasian woman play Chloe. They want to have, you know, a woman that's either Latin American or African American. And I was like, well, that's definitely not me. So again, call me when something right for me does come up. But she said, I want to bring you in anyway. So I came in and I auditioned and I was like, this is such a wash. Like, they don't want a little white girl playing this part. And, you know, I read for Alan Miles and it was lovely. And I liked the character very much, but I didn't have much invested in it. And then I just left it, you know, and they went through the whole audition process with different ethnicities and things like that. And they ended up really discovering that Chloe didn't really work in that way. They couldn't find somebody that was right for her that was of a different ethnicity. So they decided to sort of test the waters with Pete Ross being of a different ethnicity and Chloe being this little white girl from the city. Okay. And so when they did that, they called me back in and I had such attitude. I was like, Peter knows me. I've already been in. Like, I thought I was like so cool. I was like, I don't need to go back. I'm going out of town with my boyfriend this weekend. I'm not.
That's exactly what Rosenbaum said. Yeah. When I was talking to him, he was like, they kept wanting him to do stuff. He's like, look, you got my tape. I'm not going to do it better than
that. I'm not coming back in. Exactly. Get over it. Right. And my agent, Sheila Wenzel, who's now my manager, really, and a very good friend of mine, called me personally at home. And she was like, you are coming to this audition tomorrow. I don't care if you want to go away with your boyfriend. You are coming. This is going to be a huge show. If they want to see you again, come. And I was like, okay, fine. You know, so I show up at the audition. And the great thing about that is that Chloe has a chip on her shoulder, you know, and like Chloe is like very confident and Chloe knows herself. And so the fact that I came in with kind of all of those elements just sort of resting inside of me because of my experience of the audition process thus far, I think worked in my favor. And, you know, I read for Alan Miles and it was great. And then they brought me in to read for Peter and the rest of the gang at Warner Brothers. And it was great. And, you know, a couple of days later, I was on a plane to Vancouver.
Okay, so you obviously got a chance to sort of live with this character. You had the script, or at least had the sides and different things like that going forward. How did you see the character? Obviously, they had one vision in mind going into it, but then how did you start to see the character, and how did you start to play the character that eventually won you the role?
How did I see the character? I saw the character as strong, as determined, as thoughtful, and ambitious. I think that was really the thing that I saw. And when I was interviewed, you know, during the first season, they said, if you could do one thing with this character, what would you do? Like, if you could know that you made one mark with this character, what would it be? And I said, you know, I really want to change the way that young women think and feel about themselves. I really wanted to create a character that was representative of sort of a woman that was not within the conventions of her, you know, social construct, that was willing to take a chance, that was willing to do things that were challenging. And, you know, when I started the show, like, Chloe was always on the hunt to figure out what was going on with the meteors, but she didn't have any idea that Clark was involved in any way, shape, or form. Like, my whole sidekick character didn't happen until season 5. And so I spent 5 years just sort of being the mischievous person that was hunting down the information and feeding that to Clark without knowing that that was what I was doing. But I always, my acting coaches and my managers growing up, who are sort of like my gurus, Diane Harden and Nora Eckstein are their names. And they always used to say to me, play what you want the writers to write. So don't wait for them to tell you what to do. You make a decision about what you want for your character and just play that within the construct of the script that they give you. So I always played Chloe with the intent for her to have a stronger commitment to Clark, more of a voice in the legend. Like, it was always very clear to me that that was a direction that she needed to head, and it was just a matter of finding her way. And so after about season 3, my character started to take a bit of a turn, and I started to get more involved and have more to do and be more of a proponent for Clark in the show. And then about halfway through season 4, I think, is when I started to learn the secret. And then the beginning of season 5 was I follow him to the
Fortress of Solitude.
And the glacier. And then he finds out that I know, and then he tells me he's an alien. And that was when I think my character really clicked in, and I really started to get to play, like, the essence of Chloe.
Yeah, there's definitely an arc that you kind of go through there. You referenced the fact that this character was created for the television show, not in the comics. Just about everyone in the cast has their character origin in the comic books. Was that more helpful to you to not have that history coming in, or was that sort of a hindrance that you didn't have anything to draw from the comic?
Oh my God, no, it was awesome. I'm so glad. I loved it because it really gave me the opportunity to tie up so many loose ends within the legend and create bridges between things that, like, gaps that happened between, you know, our show and the previous show or the legend. So, no, it was great. I loved it. And like, what an honor, you know, DC owns my likeness. Like, that's so cool. You know, they bought my character, and that to me, like, that's a significant honor. So I love the fact that I got to start from the ground and work my way up with Al and Miles and, you know, Darren and Todd and Kelly and Brian and all the team that, Mark Warsha, all the team that, you know, helped develop my person.
Yeah, they kind of reverse engineered the character because now, like you mentioned, she's in the comic books. Well, yeah. What was that like to see yourself in the comic book then?
Oh my God, so cool. And you know what's so funny? Like I was saying, I keep myself pretty separated from sort of fandom and stuff just because of my own insecurities. But I was at a comic convention doing an autograph signing. Somebody brought a comic book, Smallville season 11 comic book and a Chloe Sullivan comic book for me to sign. And I was like, oh my God, that's me. Like, that's so weird. Check it out. And like, the cool thing is, like, if they ever make a show or a movie or anything after this that has Chloe Sullivan in it, you know, they're going to have to cast her to look like me.
Exactly.
Which is so weird.
Well, have they talked about that? Because there's a lot. Look, everything's a superhero show now. You and your team have laid the groundwork with Smallville, yeah. 10 seasons, and that sort of ushered in all of this stuff that's going on now. Have they talked about the character Chloe Sullivan? Have they talked about you coming in or doing anything in some of these newer shows?
No, you know what? They really haven't. For better or for worse, they have kept the new shows very separate from Smallville. And you know, I think that's okay. Like, I think it's good to see new iterations and new interpretations of things. And it was such a wonderful time, and we had such a great arc and such an incredible run. I think it's good to kind of just let it lie. And it's nice to pay tribute to the show and to recognize that a lot of the things that exist on TV right now, as far as the comic book realm are concerned, are an effect of what Smallville did. You know, and that's super cool to have been a part of and neat to reference. But as far as, like, resurging or resurrecting anything with respect to the show or bringing anybody back or anything like that, I don't know if that's necessary or if it would even be a good thing.
Would you be open to it?
I'm not sure.
You spent a lot of years in superhero world, yeah.
Well, you know what? It's not even so much that I wouldn't want to do another superhero show, because I do. I like the superhero world. I like the essence, and I like what it stands for and what it just tries to teach. You know, like, I just watched 3 of the X-Men movies, like, in a row. Because two of my best friends in the whole world, like, loved X-Men. And they were like, you have to watch it. It's the best. It's so cool. And I do really like it, you know. So I wouldn't be opposed to doing another superhero show or entering a comic book world again. But I don't know if I would be interested or open to playing Chloe again. It would really depend on the project, you know. And John Glover once said, like, I commit to the part, not the medium or the producer or the, you know, I go where the work is good. And so if somebody showed me a kick-ass script where Chloe was doing something amazing and I really felt passionately about the types of scripts we were churning out or stories we were telling or something like that, then of course I would be thrilled. But as far as just like remounting another Smallville, I don't think it would be honoring what we did to try and do it again like that.
I want to do a little free association with you, if you don't mind, on some of your castmates. Just first thing that pops into your head. You up for it? Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
Rosenbaum.
Corduroy. Okay.
Do we need to know what that is?
Oh, I could tell. You know, he's hysterical. And he always used to, like, make random noises on set when we would have downtime. And he would talk about the sound of corduroy when people were walking. And he would, like, make the noise. So I think about corduroy when I think of Michael.
Kristen Crook.
Gentle.
John Glover.
Elegant.
Erica Durance.
Spicy.
Okay. Context?
No. You don't get to know that one.
Justin Hartley.
Sweet.
Annette O'Toole.
Wise.
John Schneider.
Warm.
Tom Welling.
Good.
Tell us something about Tom that no one else knows.
No.
Can you give us some insight into how he approached the role or some of the conversations maybe that you had? Because, you experienced so much in 10 years with him.
Tom, yeah, you know what? Tom is a really private guy. And so I always really want to respect and uphold the fact that he likes to keep his life very, very private. And so I can speak to his work ethic. He is one of the most hardworking, well-intentioned men that I've ever worked with. And he is an incredible team player. And he is so willing to show up and just do the job the best way that he knows how to do the job. And I really think that that's why he was such a great director in the end. You know, I mean, he ended up directing a lot of the show and he became an executive producer. And he just, all of that spoke to the fact that he just really cared about making sure that the quality was good and that the people that were creating the project were upheld. And I love that about him. I think he's a very good man.
You talked about watching the Superman, Christopher Reeve movies, the Richard Donner movies, with your brother when you were younger. Man, Christopher Reeve, Margot Kidder, Mark McClure appearing on Smallville.
I know.
Just describe that experience and your memories of working with the legends in the Superman mythos.
You know what? The person that I didn't get to work with, Chris, unfortunately.
Did you get to sneak onto the set, though? Like, I mean,
no, because
okay.
You know what? Chris didn't travel. It was really hard for him to travel. Right. So they flew a very small crew out to New York and shot with him in New York. Unfortunately for us, he was on the show. But unfortunately for us, the only people that got to work with him were the director and Tom.
Okay, just a completely closed set. Closed camera. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you got a chance to sneak down and maybe pop in just to watch what was going on or anything.
No, unfortunately not. And I don't know if that would have been appropriate or respectful, even if we had the chance. Like, yeah. I think that you don't want to make someone an animal in the zoo. You know, he was here doing his job too.
Yeah.
It wasn't for us to come and stare at him. But it was such an incredible honor. Margot played my mom and she was great. That was pretty cool. She was really lovely and very, just kind and genuine and down to earth. I think for me, the biggest thing that I was like, holy f- was working with, Carrie Fisher. that was insane. So yeah. Cool. And so beyond what I ever imagined myself experiencing as an actress. I was so excited to work with her, so nervous to work with her. And she was just such a goofy, lovely woman.
How hard is it to rein in like the fangirl when you're around some of these folks?
Oh my God, I'm ridiculous. I mean, I'm a fangirl of Tom Wellings. So like after 10 years, I still would stutter when I talk to him, you know? So it's... But it's human. Like, I think it's so good to expose the fact that people inspire you and are excited about, and you're excited to know them. And I think the times that I've gotten myself in the most trouble, but, you know, within sort of the fangirl realm, are when I'm trying to pretend like I'm not. Like, you know, then I say something stupid or do something lame or miss an opportunity to really share and pay tribute to somebody who's inspired me in a way that's really great, you know. It's funny, I was in line at the airport and I cut in front of somebody and I turned around and I said, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I just cut in front of you. And it was Jason Alexander. And he said, it's okay. I'm a fan. So I don't mind. And I said, oh my God, you're a fan. I said, I'm a fan. Oh my God. Thank you so much. And he was so sweet. And now I'm actually working with him on Friday. I'm doing a play reading with him. So sort of all comes full circle.
Just but serendipitous, like, or did that lead to that?
I think I'm not sure. I'll see him on Friday and we'll talk about it. But like, I think that, you know, everybody's, if you're an actor and you're successful, it means that you love acting. So obviously you're going to have people in your world that you look up to and that you respect and that you want to be like, and the more humble and open you can be about that, the better everybody is. So
you need to like cut in front of like Spielberg or somebody at an airport.
I know, right?
That would be totally awesome. Let's talk about some of these standout episodes. Season 3, I'm guessing the episode Delete was probably one of the toughest to film. I mean, Clark tries to run over you with a truck. Lana, you and Lana have a throwdown in school. Martha and Jonathan try to kill you in the barn.
Yeah.
Okay.
That happened a lot.
Yeah, Chloe got put through a lot. This one in particular, though, I know there's, you know, stunt people involved, but man, there's a lot of shots of you, you know, having horrific things done to you. How tough was that episode? And I guess how fun was that episode for you?
You know what? I'm crazy. I like that stuff. I used to train with the stuntmen. Like there's an incredible guy called Kirk Jakes, who's now a coordinator himself, but he at the time was more of like a trainer of stuntmen. And he had this space called the Action Room with a guy called Ernie Jackson, Action Jackson, who was also a stuntman in Vancouver. And they used to have like wires and big, you know, boxing rings, and all the stunt guys would go there and train how to fall, train how to hit, train how to flip, train how to fly, like all of that stuff. And I was like, this is so much better than any sort of personal training workout ever. So I used to go and train. Kristen and I would go and train, and we would learn to fight together and learn to do all kinds of crazy rigs and stuff. So I really enjoyed that. And then Laura Lee Connolly, who's my stunt woman, is just freaking amazing. She's one of like the top stunt women in Canada, let alone North America, I think, actually. But she was just badass, and she really believed in me, and she was always willing to take the hit for me and take it harder and make me look tough. But she was also really supportive of just like, no, Allison, I think you can do this, and, you know, get in there, throw it down. And it was great, you know, and we had an awesome coordinators and a great crew, and just, they made me look good.
Yeah, it looks amazing. This is also the episode where you use the Lois Lane pseudonym before Erica Durance comes on the show. Was there a thought originally that Chloe was going to become Lois?
I think they played with that idea, but they always like to keep the fans guessing. So when the fans started to think that was what was happening, they had to, you know, they had to make a different decision just to keep everybody on their toes.
Okay. Talking about season 7 and kind of going into season 8, a lot of changes going on. You're directing, because obviously some of the cast members are directing the show. We have Rosenbaum, Schneider, obviously Welling. You're originally scheduled to direct in season 7, mm-hmm. and then because of the writer's strike, it got pushed to season 8. Talk about some of the changes just around that time, going in between, because completely new showrunners obviously coming into season 8 as well. So how did that impact you and what you were doing as an actor and then as a director?
We had new showrunners, but they had been around with us for a while, so it wasn't like people that we didn't know or weren't familiar with. I mean, our writers were very involved. So even though they were new showrunners, they were still, you know, they were familiar. It wasn't like, whoa, who are you? I think I was relieved that I had more time to study and prepare for the directing, because I was terrified and I had never done it before and I had not even thought about going to film school, and the idea of like being in charge of all of these people that I had so much respect for in such a position of power and authority without having any sort of training was terrifying for me. So, you know, I basically spent a year and a half just shadowing, you know, Schwartz and Greg Beeman and, you know, like all of the different directors, because I just wanted to learn as much as I could and be as prepared as possible. So it was a really amazing, humbling year of learning for me. And I would have extended that time as long as they would have let me, because I never felt ready. You know, Mersey Almas is our first AD and she was so supportive and wonderful. And Glenn Winter was our DP, and there's no way that I could have done it without either of them. But even with the year of training and study, I still got on set and was looking at my my mentor, Christopher Petrie, who they gave me as an assistant, but really he was like my lifeline and my brains. And I just like would look at him with a panic at the beginning of every morning, like, what do I do? You know, so it was a tough, probably the most difficult thing I've ever done. And I'm so glad I did do it. But having that, I mean, I was almost like, thank you, Writer's Strike, as brutal as it was, because it bought me some time to educate myself so that I could be more prepared to take on such a task.
Did director Allison ever catch actor Allison directing?
Yes. Inappropriately so, often.
Because Rosenbaum said he did that too as well. So
yeah, you know, and you have to give yourself time to get used to the fact that you're doing both things and get better at switching off and on, and remember not to direct your actors while you're working with them. You know, like that's annoying. But like I said, I mean, I had Christopher Petrie, who's still a fantastic filmmaker. You check out the work that he's done online; he's really great, and he was so there and so present and so consistent. And Mersey Almas as well, who was our first AD, was also just so present and so there. So when I got on set and I was actor Allison, I really just learned how to put my trust in them completely and know that between Glenn and Mersey and Chris, the shot was going to be good. And it was going to be what I wanted.
I can't imagine two better episodes to direct. Season 8, Power.
Yeah.
Season 9, Warrior. Power, Kristen Crook returned after leaving the show. She came back. So talk about that episode. Action-packed completely.
It was awesome. Kristen's one of my dearest friends. And on the show, we were like sisters. I mean, we grew up together, spent a lot of time together, traveled together. You know, like we really, really were very, very close. And so having her as the main focus of the episode was just like the best, because I felt so safe and supported by her going into it. Like I knew she had my back and was going to make it look good. So, you know, it was great. And like how cool that I get to direct an episode that's all about like female power. You know, like that was pretty awesome too. So, you know, I had a great time with that one. And then I really loved Warrior. I loved the sort of magical aspect to it and the fantasy aspect of it and the kind of lightness that the whole comic book come to life thing inspired. So yeah, I loved both my scripts. I was really proud of Warrior. I felt like Warrior had a real essence to it that that I didn't have the skill to find in Power, that was very representative of the style of filmmaking that I like and the visual aesthetic that I really am attracted to. So it felt more like Warrior was representative of me and what I like and how I would want to make a movie if I made a movie. Whereas Power was a little bit more of like, holy, what am I doing? I'm just learning, you know?
Just getting your feet wet. Yeah. Full on comic book theme with Warrior. Erica Durance as a stormtrooper and Wonder Woman.
I know, right?
Can you give us any insight into the conversations you had with her as her cosplay? Yeah.
She's amazing. She's always game. Like she's just like, she's such a good sport and she's so willing to just like throw down. And so we didn't really need to have any conversations. She was stoked about being Wonder Woman. Like she was excited about that idea. But yeah, she's great. Like you never really have to convince Erica, as long as it makes sense for her and her character and it upholds the integrity that she's trying to uphold with respect to the person she's playing. She's like super game.
I think this is the first time on the series too, where you kind of get the Clark ripping open the shirt, revealing the S.
Yeah.
Did you get all that? Did you know that the sort of, you know, weight of that moment, or was it sort of after you shot it?
No, of course. Okay. When I read it, I was like, holy crap, like I get to reveal this. That's wow. So cool. Well, my episode I get to do that. Like, that's awesome.
What was it like to shoot that scene? Was it just, did it seem to have a little bit more weight to it than some of the other ones?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a huge deal. Anytime we revealed anything having to do with the legend, it was a big deal. And we took a lot of time with it, and we really wanted to honor it and be reverential with it. You know, anytime we introduce anyone in the Justice League, or anytime there was some sort of forward movement with, you know, his costume or his disguise, or with Lois or with any of the characters, you know, we took that very seriously because that's our roots, you know.
Why do you think there aren't more female directors in the industry?
That is a fucking tough question. We should do a whole conversation just about that. I mean, I don't think it's just the film industry. I think it relates to our culture as a whole, and I think it's a very, very complex dynamic that exists between men and women right now that we're just starting to unravel. And I actually work for a women's organization called Jeunesse, and the foundation of the education that supports the organization is based in exploring exactly that. Like, how is it that women can empower themselves, but from an internal place, not from a place of wanting to be the same as men, but recognizing that we're different and harnessing our potency in that way. So it's a huge part of my life, you know, trying to figure out that exact question that you just asked. And I think it's a more complex question than just a 5-minute answer.
More directing in your future?
Yeah. I think it's more a matter of finding the right story that I want to tell and carving out the time for it. It's very all-encompassing doing that. And it would take a lot of my time. And right now I'm building a theater company, and I have this school for acting kind of combined with human potential, combined with just expression, that I'm trying to get off the ground, and then acting professionally on top of that. And then the women's organization I work with. So I have a lot of different balls in the air right now. And if I took on a project to direct, it would mean me dropping all of those balls and just focusing on the film. And while I would like to do that, I would like to do that at a time when it's responsible and appropriate, given my other, you know, commitments.
Do you prefer stage over television or film, or just all?
As far as acting or directing?
Both, from both perspectives, because you get to look at it from both perspectives now.
Yeah, I don't really know how to direct theater. I've never done that before. I mean, I kind of played around with it when I was a teenager in LA, but I wouldn't really consider that taking full ownership and directing the show. So I don't know, as far as directing is concerned, which one I would prefer. I think as far as acting is concerned, I do prefer theater. But I think a lot of that has to do with what I said at the beginning of our interview, where, like, I just like being with people. And so with theater, you get to be with not only the other actors and the crew, but you get to be with your audience. And you don't get that in film and TV. You're very separated from your audience, so you don't really have the same kind of feedback or dialogue or relationship with the people that you're telling the story to. And I like having that. I like that immediate gratification and relationship that develops.
How about voiceover work and more of that in your future? Because you obviously got to jump into the superhero world again as Power Girl.
Yeah, I love voiceover stuff. I would love to do more cartoons and more superhero stuff. I'm doing a cartoon with a friend of mine, Mark Warshaw, who was one of the guys that worked on Smallville with me. He was awesome. He actually produced and directed the Chloe Chronicles, if you remember that. That was on a web series spinoff that was on the time of Smallville.
I do. Yeah, I was going to ask you, just in the time we have, I wanted to ask you about that too, because that was sort of the mystery. That sort of, I think, helped make Chloe the breakout character of the show too, as well, didn't it?
In a lot of ways, yeah. And Mark has been a huge fan and a big supporter and just an awesome friend for years now. And he developed this great cartoon called Lost in Oz for Amazon. And it's about sort of Dorothy, young Dorothy, going to Oz. And it's a kind of a different take on the story of The Wizard of Oz. And it's great. It's such a great cartoon. And I play Dorothy's mom. That's a lot of fun. I go in and do that every couple, you know, every six or eight weeks. I go in and we bang out a couple of episodes, and it's a blast.
When and where will we get to see this?
Hopefully it'll be out before the end of the year. I'm not sure exactly when. I think they're still figuring that out. But I will make sure that you know.
Okay. And what did you think about playing Power Girl? I mean, did you get to work with I mean, this is Tim Daly and Kevin Conroy coming back to the roles of Superman and Batman. Did you get to work with them in studio at all?
No, unfortunately. You were all separate? Okay. We were all separate, yeah.
Okay. Did you get to see the final product, though?
Yes.
Okay. So what do you think of the character of Power Girl?
She's great. She's a female superhero. It's awesome. Like, you know, it's great. It's very standard, and I like it. I think it's good.
Yeah. So hopefully more of that in your future as well. So, yeah. We talked about current projects. We're going to find out more about this on your social media. Where can we find you online? Is it Twitter at Allison Mack?
Yep, at okay. Allison Mack.
And then Facebook?
Same thing, just Allison Mack.
Okay, and then AllisonMack.com as well. So you are out there. We'll find out about all these projects. Wow, man, I'm looking so forward to some of these upcoming projects and really had a fun time revisiting Smallville with you today. Happy 15th anniversary, by the way.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it.
And hopefully more directing in your future. We'll find out about all this stuff. Man, Allison Mack, thank you so much for joining me on Comic Book Central.
Thank you. I'll see you soon.
Hey, Smallville fans, if you want more in-depth conversations with your favorite Smallville talents, look no further than past episodes of Comic Book Central. They are out there, a bunch of them. Michael Rosenbaum, John Schneider, Laura Vandervoort, Dean Cain, Helen Slater, many others. Just this year alone, year three of Comic Book Central, celebrated Smallville's 15th with James Marsters and Phil Morris. Yes, those are out there. So if you haven't heard those interviews yet, be sure to check them out. You can go back and check those out. I posted all of the episode numbers on the Comic Book Central Facebook page. So again, facebook.com/Comic Book Central Network, Twitter at Comic Book CTRL. Those two pictures are out there. I put all the episode numbers on there for the Smallville folks. They're out there, so check them out. My thanks again to the lovely and talented Allison Mack for joining us today. Links to her website and social media pages, they can be found in the show notes for this episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net. More Smallville is on the way to Comic Book Central, that I can promise you. If you like what you're hearing, and I know you like what you just heard, great stuff from Allison today, don't keep it to yourself. Go right now, share the layer. If you haven't clicked share already, share the layer. Click that share button on Facebook, retweet those episode links on Twitter, call your friends, phone your neighbors, go down to the comic book store, let everybody know. If you're standing in a long line at a comic book convention, tell everybody around you. Tell them about Comic Book Central each and every week. A lot of good stuff heading your way. Let's keep that audience growing. Don't forget to check out those past episodes in the archive. If you've missed any, it's at the website. You can check them out at Blueberry, Stitcher, iTunes. If you're in iTunes, be sure to leave a review if you're loving the show. And of course, don't forget, I want to hear from you. You can now record a voicemail message just like you heard at the top of the show. You go to the website. It's on the right-hand side of the homepage. It says send voicemail. You click it. Or if you just want to send an email, you can reach me at joe@comicbookcentral.net, or you can click the Signal Me tab right at the website. That is what listener Paul Gleave did. Paul is from Perth, Western Australia, and he writes, "Hi, Joe. Just yesterday, I was catching up on some older, unplayed episodes of the show on my trusty iPod. One in particular was your convention interview with Neil Adams, where you discussed his work on the old Power Records comics. I was just wondering if you've ever considered hunting down any of the people that used to work for Power Records for an interview. I reckon a chance to hear the stories behind those things would be of interest to a lot of us boomers who own those records, and still do. I think there was an article about them a while back in Back Issue magazine, but that's all I've ever seen about that particular product. An interview with one of the business and or creative people behind that company would be very enjoyable to listen to. Just an idea. Cheers." Hey, thanks for writing in, Paul. Yes, the interview you mentioned with Neil Adams, that was episode 40 of Comic Book Central. That was one of my visits to Terrificon. You heard from my buddy Mitch, Terrificon showrunner at the top of the show. Runs a terrific convention, to say the least. In addition to Neil Adams on that episode, lots of other cool guests. On episode 40, Ray Park, Darth Maul, he was on there. William Capp, the greatest American hero, he showed up. Jerry Ordway, comic book writer and artist, he was on there as well. So, very cool episode. And yes, it was fun to revisit those old Power Records. Oh man, I love those things. Talking to Neil Adams about that, we talked to Neil about his writing and artwork on those classic comic book and record sets from the 1970s. So that was fun. Yes, I've been wanting to do a Power Records-themed episode since then. I just haven't found a way to do it right now. Got busy doing other things, too. And also not easy to sort of research all the talents on those record sets. The voice actors, the artists, the writers, they really weren't credited in the, I mean, in the books, you think they were sort of promoted as toys. They were sold in, you know, or coloring books, I think, and everything were. So they really didn't get into a lot of the creators on there. Of course, we know Neil Adams going back. Of course, his artwork's on there and his writing, he mentioned that. The comics that were previously published, I know Spider-Man, like Mark of the Man-Wolf, Captain America, those things, we know those credits from the comic books, but really know none of the other ones. Some of the voice actors have passed away. I know one in 2010. So yes, kind of tough to find out the people behind that. And also, you mentioned Back Issue Magazine. Yes, you're correct on that. Two articles written by Rob Kelly, great writer and podcaster. He wrote those two articles for the magazine on Power Records. Rob also heads up the Power Records blog online. He also heads up the Facebook page and the Power Records podcast. All those are out there. Excellent resources if you want to know more. Now, all that said, you did put my mind back into Power Records mode with your email. So I did some digging. I made some calls. I sent some emails. Stay tuned. A Power Records themed episode of Comic Book Central is coming your way. And it's coming your way sooner than you think. So thanks again for writing in. Thanks for the suggestion. Thanks for kind of putting me back into Power Records frame of mind. That's coming your way. All right, folks, that's all the time we have for today. Year 4 is officially underway. More surprises, more giveaways, more commentaries, more convention Q&As, more amazing guests headed your way every week, all year long. In fact, next week on Comic Book Central, an amazing talent who can be seen in Guardians of the Galaxy, and he's returning to the world of Gilmore Girls. That's right, a double dose of double G's with actor Sean Gunn. He's going to be here. In fact, since Gilmore Girls returns next Friday, November 25th, you're going to get the lair a few days early. You can share the lair a few days early on that. My interview with Sean Gunn will be online, on iTunes, everywhere you can find the lair, Thursday the 24th, so a couple days early. Until then, keep flying, keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content in this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 imported license. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
This is the story of an amazing boy who grew up in the fields of Kansas in a little town called Smallville. When he became a man, he believed the only way to seize his destiny was to turn his back on both his parents and refuse to see the darkness descending on Earth. But all that was about to change. He was about to face his greatest challenge. And that was the day the boy turned into Superman.
There will always be more adventures for another day.